Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Welcome back to College Football Game Day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Danny Klinkscale, Stan Weber. Danny Klinkscale at DannyKlinkscale.com is my email. Reasonably Irreverent Podcast is where you hear a lot of our stuff, including Stan and I on Mondays or Tuesdays for our football weekend, and every Saturday right here for our 20th year. Stan, big game of the day nationally in college football. Obviously still has a Big 12 twist as well. Fantastic atmosphere for the television version of College Game Day down in Austin, Texas. I'm going to guess by the way that people operate maybe down in Austin that a lot of those kids just said, we'll stay up all night and then we'll go to game day. But anyway, this is a game, the perfect kind of power game non-conference setup, because this game provides an incredible boost for the team that wins, and it really doesn't eliminate the team that loses from the potential of making the playoff.
That's right. If you got a big enough name, and I think it's the name that really matters, and you can get by if this is the only loss, and if you win, you get super extra credit down the line, Big 12 versus SEC. Is Texas ready for prime time? Well, they have the advantage of being at home, and Danny Klinkscale obviously loves 6th Street, so that's the famous place in Austin. So I know you'd spend the whole night getting ready for this ball game, but the Longhorns ought to. It's good to be back in prime time. You remember last year they beat Oklahoma in the Red River rivalry and didn't win the championship game, but they got there. So is Tom Herman for real? It's an interesting question. Yet to figure out how much I believe in Tom Herman as an elite coach, but he definitely is getting things rolling in the right direction with Texas. I think he's bringing a physical attitude. He's working him hard at practice. Things that Texas was a little lax on there for a couple years. They had athletes, but they were soft. You know, good kids, but they just weren't pushed. It looks like they are right now. And you might think, if you're me, you might have an opportunity for a coaching advantage being Tom Herman, because the guy on the other sideline is Ed Ogeron. Fun recruiter, great guy, players love him, but you just think, really? Is Ed Ogeron really going to coach the LSU Tigers up? Well, it's interesting, Danny. Teams not named Alabama that LSU has played with Ed Ogeron as the head coach, they played 5 times against top 10 opponents. They are 5-0. LSU's only lost to Alabama as a top 10 team. So we'll see how well they travel. Both these teams, to me, expect to be top 10 type like teams, but I would expect them to be more like 15-25 as the season plays out. But today will change my attitude, I think. Whoever can get out there and get a win is definitely in consideration for why not top 10, because there's a lot of parity in college football, and other than Alabama and Clemson, maybe Georgia, why not be the fourth best team in the country? It could be almost anybody. Texas is a favorite sitting at home. If they go out and get the business done, that's pretty impressive to take on a team like LSU. And obviously, if LSU is able to go on the road and win, we're going to say what a team they have. So this is fun. This is a – we talked about Missouri, West Virginia. To me, it doesn't take a lot to be satisfied with the way scheduling goes nowadays. That game right there is a pretty nice game, but this one is even way bigger. It's a national spotlight game, no doubt about it.
Just real quick, because we love talking quarterbacks with you, Sam Ellinger. He's a player who has toughness and fight. It seems to be someone who's going to get hurt every now and then. But how do you assess him as a quarterback? He played hurt last year.
Well, I mentioned about the Moxie and Carter Stanley for those that are listening at the top of the show. And I really like those kind of players. I think they overachieve. They're confident above and beyond where they really should be, which is a great trait for a quarterback. And that's what Sam Ellinger is. I was down on the field here at K-State just a little bit ago at our break and, you know, talked to Colin Klein. And Sam Ellinger reminds me a lot of Colin Klein, where his team's good, but they really need to take the next step and be great. And that's what Colin Klein did in 2011 before that great 2012 season. And it seems like Sam Ellinger did that. I thought Texas was as good as they were last year because he made winning plays, physical plays, passing better than you think. absolute leader, says we are not going to lose. I'll do whatever it takes to convert on third down. I love the way he plays. Is he an NFL quarterback? Not in my mind, but he's a very, very good college quarterback. I said Tom Herman wants a little more physicality with Texas. I think that's good. But I really think Sam Ehlinger is the guy that changed the way Texas football gets played. He runs with a style, you know, like Vince Young, smacking into people, doing whatever it takes. I'm very impressed. I think Sam Ehlinger is a big difference maker. There's a lot of pressure on him when you expect to be a top-10 level quarterback. But I think he actually throws the ball better, Danny, than people give him credit for. He likes to throw the in-cutting routes. Watch for the 10-yard dig route on third down and 7. He's been very proficient at throwing that ball. He may not be a great deep ball thrower, but third down conversion, I think he's getting better.
Let's talk a little bit of sort of a local focus as well. So many Nebraska fans in this area, and, you know, they have designs on coming back and being a relevant player in the college football scene. Some people think that this year's team can bring them that. But they face a tough road test at Colorado, an old Big 8 type of game as Nebraska goes there. They're just a 4.5-point favorite. Colorado won their first game in pretty impressive fashion over Colorado State. That's an intriguing game.
Super intriguing. I'm glad you brought that one up. We're making a big deal about LSU interconference, but this interconference does not feel like interconference. It feels very comfortable, like the best fitting of old pair of jeans you ever had. Nebraska, Colorado. Is it the Friday after Thanksgiving, Danny? Or are we early in September? It's an exciting game. Nebraska believes they're back, but they didn't play that way last week. The offense really struggled. They were in a battle. It was the theme of today's show here on College Game Day. Those teams that don't have the big names can still play high-level football. We saw it on the field in Lincoln, Nebraska. I think we can put that game behind us. I think Nebraska may be a team that improves as much as any other in the country from week one to week two. Because you can say Missouri blew it, but Missouri didn't play awful in a lot of stages of their game. Nebraska just did not look like themselves, like they finished off last year. And this is kind of a must win. You need to go out, even though you're on the road. You're better than Colorado, and you really want Nebraska football to be back this year. You need to go out there and win a game. It's one that I'm really looking forward to. Brings back so many great memories.
And finally, as we get a little national perspective, does Texas A&M have anything for Clemson today?
Well, Jimbo Fisher, one thing about having a coach like him is it's not too big for him to go on the road and compete at this level. Clemson was a little sloppy. And I know they just it's hard, Danny, when they annoyed you. Trevor Lawrence, they just anointed him. It's easy. He's the most NFL-ready quarterback. Danny, it's hard in an offseason. After your first year of starting, that everyone puts you on the cover of every magazine and says it's easy. I'll be interesting to see how Trevor Lawrence plays in Clemson. Their defense is so good. I think they're going to be protected. It's a tough place to play. I would expect Clemson to win. But, yeah, A&M has the athletes. Their coach is going to be in a perfect situation. He's a feisty guy, had those experiences at big-time schools. So another good intersectional game. But I do think Clemson is too good. And if Trevor Lawrence plays like he did at the end of last year, if the hype tells us he should, then Clemson will be able to separate and win by – you know, maybe 3 touchdowns. So I think it's up to Trevor Lawrence. I think Clemson gets out of there with a win, but if he plays well, then there's a big separation.
Stan, you have a great broadcast today. Thousands will be listening. No pressure there. Enjoy another game with your son, and he started last week. What a tremendous accomplishment, and have a wonderful day in Manhattan.
Yeah, can't wait to talk to Ben Lieber next, but excitement's building here in Manhattan. K-State football. Landry did a nice job last week. Stanton helping out with the coaching staff did a good job. It's a family affair, and K-State fans hoping it goes again well this week. So let's get after some college football. Can't wait.
Stan Weber and I with Ben Lieber coming up next, and then Todd Lebo and I will wrap things up and talk some college football as well right here on College Football Game Day. Game Day. We're rolling again for the college football season, and it's our pleasure to be joined by Ben Lieber, longtime NFL linebacker after a great career at K-State. And
number
now,
52 in my mind.
And in your programs and in
yeah,
your hearts.
Yeah, I remember.
And now wearing many hats in the broadcasting industry, we're talking more to him because of his analyst role on Fox Sports. Did the Iowa State game last week. He'll do the K-State game this week. And welcome to the program, Ben.
Hey, man, thanks for having me on. How you guys doing?
We're doing just great. And we're even better now that we have you here.
Yeah, college football is on. So and yes, well, you had a sweet little game. I tell you what, you kicked off the college football season in spades with a multi-overtime game, Northern Iowa and Iowa State. Iowa State picked to be third in the conference. Just, first of all, I loved watching it. I knew football's for real. But I guess my theme for the week has been that the FCS teams know how to play football. You don't have to say, oh, that was disappointing. There's no disappointing. These teams really can bring it. So what do you see on Saturday?
You know, same thing. I don't know what – I know that these FBS coaches are saying all the right things about, hey, you can't overlook some of these FCS teams or whatever, but I don't know if any of these coaches are putting together a montage of the last 10 years, how these FCS teams will come up and beat just the pants off of some of these FBS teams. And there should just be a highlight clip that goes around every year and gets added to prove that to these young guys, and maybe they just don't know. Maybe the young players in college football don't realize that these FCS programs are legit programs, especially if you're talking about Missouri Valley, Eastern Washington, the Youngstown State type of crowd. They are physical. They're going to beat you up. They're usually, for whatever reason, they're always well coached. You think that there'd even be a drop off in coaching when you go down to that level, but the coaching's good. The talent seems to be as equal. The execution is right up there with the tops in the FBS. And that was no different this last week. I mean, as you guys laid it out, Iowa State's supposed to finish in all the preseason polls in the Big 12 3. Which, in my mind, is you're contending. You're contending for a Big 12 title. And, for them to kind of stumble, as you will, against Northern Iowa is a little shocking. But at the same time, Northern Iowa, they've got a young, talented quarterback that can really do some damage, and their defensive line was no joke.
Do you think it's natural? You mentioned the players and showing them a highlight reel. I mean, these players, in all likelihood, weren't recruited by a school like this and wouldn't have considered, in many cases, especially the best players, even going to one of these schools, or they would have considered it, a fallback plan, a safety school or something like that. So wouldn't that naturally play into their feelings about playing these teams?
I think naturally it would, but I think that's the narrative that probably needs to change. Now, if you're getting recruited by the lowest of the FCS, then you can say, like, okay, I think I'm a little more talented, and I'll take myself and see what I can do at an FBS school, especially a Power 5 school. But you start looking at, historically, some of these teams, again, in the Missouri Valley Conference, that are playing for national championships at their level, and you shouldn't scoff at it. And I know that a lot of people have this, as a young high schooler, they're like, okay, I want to play for the top echelon, Power 5 schools, but it's not necessarily a fallback down, and you feel less prideful than playing for one of these FCS schools, because you got a chance to win national championships. You got a chance to get that good feeling of winning, being on a winning team and a winning culture, and all the while get your good education paid for. So yeah, I think that we focus sometimes, we tell these young kids, we focus on what's the shiniest and the brightest, but I think that sort of needs to change with these young guys, that you can get a great education and play high-quality football at some of these FCS schools.
I can add to the marketing that Ben just started right there. Don't forget, they get to play in a playoff, a real playoff,
yeah.
Not just four teams acting like that's perfect. So they get to play some ball games. You practice all the time, no matter what, in football. So, well, that's our story about the FCS. But back to the big boys, Iowa State does deserve a big view in this area, in Kansas City and all the states around here that can hear us on the 50,000 watts here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's a first game, but what are your thoughts about Brock Purdy, quarterback, Matt Campbell, a hot young head coach that has things going in the right direction? Any feel that you get after you subtract out that first game issue? What do you think about Iowa State? Do you think they're going to be competing with Texas and Oklahoma to win the Big 12 championship?
Well, I was pretty hot on them going into that game, thinking that absolutely with that defense, they can compete. And we didn't know at the time what Jalen Hurts was going to look like, and he looks just phenomenal already for Oklahoma. That's scary for the rest of the conference. But you look at what Texas has got on offense, and like, well, Iowa State can defensively can compete with those guys. And so, of course, a lot of it came down to what's my assessment of Brock Purdy. And it was slightly underwhelming. I expected a little bit more. I think there is a legit concern about what they're going to have at wide receiver, who's their go-to guy. And that program the last couple of years has seen some big, tall, physical receivers that just physically outmatched a lot of corners and secondaries in Lazard and Butler. And I think they fell into that trap of just relying on those guys. You can just kind of throw the ball up to them. They would win a lot of those battles, and they'd be kind of wide open. So accuracy wasn't as paramount. I think that Brock is going to be challenged this year of really honing in his accuracy and delivering the ball in a place where he can allow his guys to run after catch. I didn't see a lot of deep shots down the field. I don't know if that was a game plan. It was a very conservative and controlled offense and sort of approach out of Matt Campbell and that group. And I think it's going to take more than that if you want to compete and win the Big 12.
Well, you mentioned something very interesting because Butler is a big-time go-to receiver. When a quarterback looks around and says, I don't see anybody open, is he okay to throw to? The answer was always yes. He's big and strong,
Yeah. Could
run, and it's a great outlet, a smart play by a quarterback. David Montgomery's showing an early NFL looks like he is a guy who's a legitimate NFL running back. They don't have him anymore. I think those are all relevant, but I also want to point out real quick, just a comment since you brought this up. Guys, you know, I played quarterback where I became a starter midway through the year. And it almost is beneficial that you almost have nothing to lose, like Brock Purdy did. Come in, you're young, no one expects a lot. If you don't function perfectly, well, you weren't the starter at the beginning of the year.
And if you're replacing somebody, it's because they weren't doing the job.
Yeah, I mean, you got a lot of positive capabilities out there, and people aren't focusing on the negativity or the pressure. You must be perfect. And I'm not trying to blast Brock Purdy because I thought he played great last year. But let me tell you, then everyone thought I was great after that season. And I'm telling you, it's a long off season with everyone patting you on the back and talking about how good you are and how easy it is. And it isn't easy. Brock Purdy's young. I wonder, the psychological part of this, it's not easy when everyone says, oh, you're obviously one of the best quarterbacks in the Big 12, and you are playing with the third best team. Maybe you'll win a Big 12 championship. You know, it's going to be hard to make this next step, Ben. It's not easy being in that quarterback position.
No, you hit it right on the head. I mean, I think it's a term that we threw around a lot in our interviews with Iowa State. Was just expectations for the team. But I don't think that word should be taken lightly when you look at individually the expectation for Brock Purdy. How does he handle that? You know, you can go through all the necessary processes in the off season of, you know, coaching him through it, you know, avoiding distractions and don't believe the hype, and you can do that stuff. But, you know, a young kid is a young kid, and they, especially with social media and all that stuff, it's hard to avoid all that stuff. And then there's just the natural progression that's unique and individual to every player. You know, some guys may see huge strides from year one to year two or year two to year three, and they may take big leaps. And other guys are sort of a slow progression of like, okay, I got a little bit better in year two with some of these things, and I get a little bit better in year three. And then maybe collectively, if you look back, you're like, wow, he's really progressed, but it was slower, and the maturation process was a little bit slower. I think Brock is going to have to weave through that with public expectation, with scrutiny, with criticism, and just what's the right flow for him. You know, if he tries to make big, drastic jumps, is he being too risky with the football? Is he then becoming inaccurate and unproductive, all the while as he's just trying to grow and learn? And then that sort of compounds the criticism and the negativity. So it's going to be interesting to see how he handles that, how the team handles that, and how I think Matt Campbell handles that from an offense. Just your approach, like, how much can I give him? You know, how much can he handle? Are we going to have to rely and ask one of our running backs to really step up and be kind of a bell cow? It'll be an interesting storyline for those guys.
Former K-State and NFL linebacker Ben Lieber, now with Fox Sports, called the Iowa State game. And just one more quick thing on Iowa State. They did win the game, and that's the big difference between winning and losing is so great, especially they instantly get a bye before they play Iowa. Mm-hmm. So that would have been a big sour taste for in the week off before the next big in-state rivalry.
Yeah, that is a nice thing. I mean, I think having an early bye sometimes hurts you, but in college football, I think it does work out, especially now going to a two-bye system. Unlike the NFL, you don't get any preseason games. It's the first time that both squads can test their players out and get real tape when it's a live game, and they can really truly evaluate these guys outside of a scrimmage in camp. And I think it's a great situation for them to be in to play a game against a high-caliber opponent, get a feel for where you're at, take a deep breath, let the dust settle a little bit, tweak your game plan, tweak some personnel, and then go after your big in-state rival in week three.
And your players will be focused now. No worry about overlooking anybody. A big theme in the Big 12 the first week, every one of them won. All 10 teams won, and at Iowa State, I don't care what the score was. The difference between winning and losing is monumental. They got the job done. They'll move on. Kansas, the same thing. But another quarterback that really took, I think, the big strides, and we've seen it at K-State often with Bill Snyder as a quarterback, I mean, as a coach and a quarterback guru type. It seems when a guy started for two or three years, gets to their junior year, they take a leap. And Chris Klieman, they do a great job with quarterbacks as well. It looked like Skylar Thompson took a giant jump. He played almost a flawless game. You get a plus or a minus when they evaluate you, Danny, on each play. That doesn't tell you what happened with Skylar Thompson. There's something better than a plus for each play.
Right.
He was in control, played great. You're getting ready to do K-State today against a Bowling Green team that had a successful win with their head coach in their first game. But your thoughts on what you saw from K-State and getting ready for today's second game of the season?
I'm with you. I couldn't have been more impressed with how Skylar played. You're going to look at all the stat watchers out there are going to look at maybe, some incomplete passes and all this other stuff, and you're like wondering why everybody's applauding him. It's one of those games you have to watch. You have to watch it with your own eyes and say, man, all those drops that the receivers had, they weren't tough behind the back or just off the fingertips and you consider it a drop. No, those were spot on, sometimes in traffic, placed exactly where the ball needs to be with the amount of touch that I think was required for that particular pass. I thought from a pure quarterbacking perspective, he showed you everything that you want to see out of a quarterback. If you want a deep shot down the field, I'm going to put just enough air on it and lead the guy, even with a guy on his hip, to put it in a place where the receiver can catch it. That's a drop in the end zone. Then we'll give you a quick crossing route with speed as he's rolling out to the left, and I'm going to deliver it on a spot, and the receiver drops it. Like, the misses weren't his fault. And then to show off his athleticism when he decided to pull the ball down and run, I thought was fantastic as well. The tempo which he played with seemed like he's a savvy vet that's been in Klieman's system for 4 years. I mean, that's kind of how I felt about it. And I think that is huge for, obviously, the team and for his development and for where this offense can go.
Do you think that Chris Klieman was, well, you talked about the coaches at the outset, do you think he's a better person to bring the message about playing a team from another level? Because he was just at that level, and he's like saying,
and Nichols
hey,
is good.
Right, and he's going to say, that team's good. We were great, and I know how good they were. And he seems like he might be in a better position for the players to actually engage in it and then not just roll their eyes and go, Nichols, really? Come on, coach.
Right. Well, and I think that's also just part of the newness, too. If we're going to compare, let's just say, what Matt Campbell's been saying, he's been there a few years now. And so there's only so many things you can say as a coach before the players are like, okay, that's coach speak. We've heard that before. And, how much weight does it carry now? But when you're a first-time head coach, a lot of these things are brand new. And so you're just kind of on the edge of your seat, and you're absorbing everything that the coach is saying because you're like, yeah. Even if it's the same stuff that Snyder said, it's just different. It's a different feel. It's a different approach, different culture. It's a different game. It's a different week of game environment and how he's going to do things. So I think all that sort of helped him get that message across to his players that you can't take a team like Nichols State for granted because we haven't proven anything to ourselves. Like, let's go prove it to ourselves first, regardless of who we're playing. and win for each other and go out there and put out a good performance. And they did. I mean, they were terrific on defense. Their offense was spectacular. And you know, you heard it from Skyler himself. It was the most fun that he's ever had playing there. And I think that's a large part of what Kleiman has done with his approach, from a practice standpoint, from changing music standpoint, from just allowing these guys to go out there and play free.
Ben talked about the fun. If you're on the offensive side of the ball and your offensive line is mowing people over and the running game works, diversity in the running game, Tom Osborne, we've seen a lot of success around the world doing that, you know, Bill Snyder, et cetera. But I got to ask you to put your old linebacker hat on, because I remember you as number 52. I started the interview that way. I was saying on the air with Wyatt when I played free safety as my freshman year, the way that they're pounding on nickels. I said, when you're on the defensive side, sometimes you go numb and you really don't, you forget down a distance. You forget actually believing that you're going to make a play. It's just like the play happens and suddenly you hit a few people and you look and they gain four and then they gain eight and then they gain seven and then they gain six. Then they gain nine. Hey, I was a long ways back there at free safety. You were in the middle of that crunching going on. What is it like being a linebacker in that situation? Do you feel what I kind of got when people ran over us like that, kind of that numb feeling where you're not quit trying, but you don't know how you can stop them. You're not reading blocks perfectly. You're just kind of accepting what's happening to you. Nichols got in. They got punched in the mouth. What was it like being a linebacker when an offensive line comes off with this kind of diversity in the running game?
You say to yourself, damn it, not again. you do run into that little bit of that haze and things just kind of melt together. And, you know, especially it's the type of runs. You know, if you're going against, I remember going against Nebraska when they're just steamroll us. And not only would you have to be, you'd have to think every single play about, okay, what type of option is this? Like you're constantly, you're having to break it down in a matter of split seconds of like, okay, is this a dive option, a veer option, a speed option, you know, are they pulling a guy? Which guy are they pulling? What defense are we in? How are we going to fit this one? All of that has to be deciphered in a matter of a couple steps. And when they start doing that, where, again, you might stop them for 3 yards. Well, their identity is to say, we're going to hit you again. You know, other teams will say, okay, 3 yards, we're not happy with that. Let's throw a pass or something. That was the other thing I think that I liked about Kleiman and his offensive approach was not every run play was successful. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, yeah, we won that one. No, they had some good plays, too. And they might get stuffed at the line, and there might be a 1 or 2 yard gain, but they just kept going, and they kept going. And that's what you're talking about, the defense, that you keep getting hit, and you keep getting this big fullback, and I don't care if it's a demeanor who it is, you know, pounded on you and then hitting you. And then an offensive lineman doubles up and they come up to the linebackers. And now you got to hit a 300-pounder and try to get off and then make a tackle on the running back that's running downhill. It exhausts you. It mentally and emotionally wears you down. And, you know, to take this and transition into the game this weekend, K-State's better buckle up, too, on defense now. You know, Bowling Green, they did the exact same thing. It was a mirror image of games between these last two teams last week. And they're going to go high tempo on offense, and their identity is to run the football right down your mouth. So those guys, they can feel happy and fresh that they got, what, 40 or 41 snaps on defense. But everything that you're talking about could happen this weekend if K-State's defense doesn't step up and stop these guys.
Well, Ben, we can wrap it up on college football. You are involved heavily in the Minneapolis area in the NFL. I tell you, we got one game in the books from Thursday night, but it is so exciting to see real football. I have to ask you one question about that before we let you go, because you played in the NFL, you follow the NFL, you do NFL games, etc. What about this whole new philosophy that we're not going to play in the preseason? Like college, we don't want to have a preseason game. All the starters stand over here without shoulder pads on, and then we're going to kick it in gear at noon Central Time in hot weather and gas it out for a whole game. You know, the starters are going to play the whole game. It seems a little weird to me. I feel almost stolen from as a fan that I don't know if these players are ready, but maybe they are. What do you think about this new philosophy that we saw come down our throats more than ever this season? They defied that the third game of preseason even mattered.
Yeah, I don't love it. You know, I took some value in the preseason, and I'll be the first to admit that there are games during the preseason in my career where you go in sort of half-assed, and you do try to, you know, get in self-preservation mode and like, all right, let me just get my 10 plays and then get in and get out. But I think that our practices were much more intense back then. I did feel more ready for the season, and it was easier to turn that light switch on when it comes to the regular season and the speed of what the regular season is compared to preseason. And I think it's a collective thing. You know, the development of football players at the NFL level is becoming significantly less and less because they're practicing less and less. And as you guys know, the only way to truly practice football, I think, is full speed. And you have to do it. You have to put very consistently. You can't just do it every once in a while because guys fundamentally want to be lazy. You want to be efficient, and maybe lazy is the wrong word, but you want to be efficient about your effort and the amount of energy you put out. And so they're not testing these guys in OTAs, in minicamp, you get into training camp, and all of a sudden now they're having non-padded practices a lot. You're having three-quarter speed practices, and you're trying to evaluate these guys on, like, how are they going to play in the regular season and playoffs and hopefully a Super Bowl when we barely go full speed. That's why you see poor play on the offensive line. You see a lot of penalties in the preseason, and you're going to see a lot of penalties in the first quarter of the season because guys are going to get tired, and their technique is bad because they haven't practiced full speed. So I don't like where this is going, and I'm not sure we can put it back the way it was because the CBA is only going to get more and more friendly for the players.
Can't get better at football without playing some football. Nice. I loved what he said, and I think we're actually ending up putting the players at a higher risk of injury. I think we're seeing a lot more injuries.
Agreed.
Because they just aren't going through that first 4 or 5 days. Your body feels awful. It's going to let you down. You're never going to make it through. And all of a sudden, I don't know, like a shield of armor gets around you, and football hits don't hurt anymore, and you play. And we're just watching guys fall like flies in the NFL because I don't think they ever got ready to play. So I loved what you said. I just am really wondering how it's going to roll tomorrow when those guys got to play four quarters and they haven't even played a down of preseason. So, hey, I'll love it. It'll probably be competitive, but I don't know if it's the best we can see. Ben, we loved having you on, and can't wait to see you at the stadium today.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Looking forward to it.
That's Ben Lieber from Fox Sports, former K-State and NFL linebacker, longtime linebacker. He joins us right here on College Football Game Day. Welcome back to College Football Game Day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We wrap things up with one Todd Lebo, who obviously is someone who has quite a base of knowledge about college football. I always love talking to Todd. And I'd love talking to Todd even more if this headphone volume thing would work a little bit there. It's a little better. How you doing this morning, Todd?
Doing great, Danny. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. We always like to get your perspective on the Oklahoma Sooners in the few minutes we have to chat college football with you. What were your general impressions of your opening game against Houston, a game that was dominated by the Sooners, but they gave up their standard 30 or 40. I saw a big bar as I'm looking up at College Football Game Day, the television version today. Is it Jalen Hurts Heisman to lose? So just start with that and your general takeaway from the opener for the Sooners.
Well, you know, he got up to a great start offensively. I mean, you go off and you score 6 touchdowns. That's a good spot to be in. Lincoln Riley is always going to have his offense working. So, yeah, Jalen Hurts, he started off great. I always knew he could throw the ball a little bit better than maybe they asked him to do at Alabama. Alabama was mostly just thrown down the field. He's a good quarterback. He wasn't a highly recruited quarterback for no reason, right? You know, when Alabama comes calling and you're from Texas, you go there, you're someone who's got some talent, and he just, you know, they over-recruit people. That's what happens. And he saw his chance to come to Oklahoma. I'm not a huge fan of the way the transfer stuff works, but that's the world we live in. You might as well be good at it, and Oklahoma's been good at it. The most important thing for Oklahoma this year is going to be the defense. There's no question about that. They did look better. Here's a stat for you, Danny. They had 3 and out the first 2 possessions of the game against Houston. And Houston, by the way, has a very good quarterback who's played a lot. 2 and out for the first 2 possessions. First time in 2 years the Sooners had done that. They did not do that once last year. So that's progress, right?
Yes.
They did give up some yards and points late, but you know that's standard. They played a lot of different players, and Alex Grinch, who is the nephew of Gary Pinkel, with for a little connection back to the local area, is the new defensive coordinator. He's been at Ohio State, Washington State, and some places, and was at Mizzou at one point. He brings a different style of play. They were much more aggressive, and I think Oklahoma's on a good track. They're playing South Dakota tonight. That shouldn't be much of a test. They are at UCLA next week, which is a road BCS game, but I don't think Chip Kelly's long for the world, so they ought to get themselves to 3-0.
And in general, I just want to get back to Jalen Hurts for just a minute. There seemed to be in the run-up to this season, and I think you addressed it a little bit, the thought that Jalen Hurts wasn't really that much, that he had just benefited from being the Alabama quarterback, that he was good but not great. He is what he is. I heard a lot of that from analysts. And why do you think that was?
Well, because he was not performing well in the national title game 2 years ago, and he got taken out, and then Tua won the game. But, you know, if you think back, you know, Alabama would not have been in the college football playoff last year without Jalen Hurts coming in when Tua got hurt in the SEC championship game. They were losing to Georgia. And Jalen Hurts came in and was great in that game. Threw a touchdown pass, ran for one. I mean, he really brought him back. They were toast. They were down a couple of scores. So when I watched that game again, it was like the number one college football game of the year, and I watched the fourth quarter of it this summer, and I'm like, you know what? He's not that bad. He can throw the ball a little bit. I think what generally happens if you lose your job, people think you're no good. And the people forget that he was a pretty good winner for them, and his numbers were fine throwing-wise. I mean, he had very few interceptions. Wasn't making mistakes, but I think people just saw Tua as a better player. So obviously Jalen Hurts is no good. But I tell you what, you put a talented quarterback in the hands of Lincoln Riley, he's going to be a great quarterback, because I do think he's the best offensive coach in college football.
When you look at Oklahoma in the context of the Big 12, is this purely, you think, a two-team race, especially after you watched Iowa State go out and almost get beat by Northern Iowa?
Yeah, I think Iowa State will improve as they go, but that was disappointing from my eyes, because I really thought Iowa State had a chance to be in the title game. They still do. They haven't lost anything. I want to see them play against Iowa next week and see how they kind of respond to the scare they had. You know, we all know Northern Iowa is a fine program,
mm-hmm.
but you're not supposed to come down to that. I mean, the ball was on the ground. If they didn't recover the football, the game was over in the third overtime. And, you know, it really took them a lot to fight back to kind of be in the game. So I was disappointed with that. I'm not counting them out, though. But it looks like a two-team race. I'm very curious to watch Texas and LSU tonight. I think LSU is as loaded as they've been in a while. And people are excited about Texas. Sam Ellinger had a really nice game last week. We'll see how well he throws. He's gotten better at throwing every year he's played. He's played a lot of football now. They should be in good shape to do it. They've lost a lot of talent on the defense for Texas. And, you know, their defense wasn't great last week. If you look at the numbers, the three teams in the Big 12 who played FBS teams all had the worst defensive numbers. So everything's a little bit skewed. But OSU, OU, and Texas all played better opponents than everyone else did. This is a big step up, you know, talent-wise for Texas tonight. It ought to be a great scene. I want to see how Ellinger responds to playing what will be the best defense they play all year.
Let's talk about the Missouri Tigers. They get cranked up in just a few minutes here, and a game that all of a sudden has some real import for Missouri. I think the feeling was that West Virginia was down, and certainly they weren't going to lose to Wyoming, so that this game was just going to be kind of a you know, nice way to unveil the South end zone. Now there's some real pressure on Barry Odom. Of course, he's been there before, but Barry will be right back on the old warm to hot seat if things don't go well today.
Oh, the fans were mad last week during the game, no doubt. Listen, it was poor defense by Missouri to give up as many rushing yards as they had. And I don't want to go full Greg Robinson and Dick Vermeil on you, but it really was two plays that had, you know,
that's what Ryan
they would
Walters
have still
given
up 100. Yeah, they would have been 160 yards on 40 carries besides those two plays. But the plays happen. And you're in the SEC. You're not supposed to have a Wyoming quarterback running for 70 yards on you, okay? It's not supposed to happen. West Virginia is not good. They were plus +3 in turnovers against James Madison, who's a fine FCS team. Plus +3 in turnovers last week and only won by 7. They're as talent poor as they've been in a long time. Their quarterback's a transfer from Oklahoma, Austin Kendall, who did okay last week, but they don't have the skill position players, and they certainly don't have the defensive players that they've had. They had so many guys in the transfer portal who left. So this is a down West Virginia team. They're on the road for the first time. I do believe that they're going to be a good team, but they're taking this as the first year. We know we're going to take our lumps. You know, must win, whatever. If Missouri loses this game, I'll be super disappointed. I was disappointed they lost to Wyoming, but I could kind of explain it away with the turnovers, where they happened, and the things that happened during that game on the road against a place that was fired up for them to come in. This is game one at Columbia for them. They cannot lose this game. I expect they win this game by 3 touchdowns. I really do. I'll be super disappointed if they lose the game, and I'll be disappointed if the game's close, because I think they do have a talent advantage over what West Virginia is bringing in. Kelly Bryant has got to have better decision-making. He just has to. We saw Saturday night why Clemson moved on from him.
You know, to your point about West Virginia looking at things in the long term, we heard it from Vic Koenig. If people didn't hear the interview we just did with the defensive coordinator for West Virginia, he basically sort of calmly and offhandedly said, you know, we're going to play 2-3 people at every position. It's not like we don't try to win every game, but we've got to have some depth. We've got to look at the long term. He almost was saying in a sort of a way that, well, we're probably going to lose this game anyway, so we need to see some guys.
Yeah, they're under no pressure to make a bowl game there. I think they understand that they kind of had all their eggs in their basket with Dana Holgorsen and the transfer Will Greer last year. Didn't work out. Holgorsen decided to leave. His time was up there. This is a fresh start with a coach I think they're dedicated to. So they're going to take their lumps here. You know, I mean, they've got this game against Missouri. Then they've got NC State next week in a game that I think got washed out last year. It was supposed to be a hurricane game or whatever. This team could be 1-2 going into the Big 12. Then they're coming to Kansas. That's going to be not an easy game for them. It's going to be an easy game for most everyone. It's not going to be an easy game for them. They're going to take their lumps. I don't think there's any chance West Virginia makes a bowl game. They've got a chance to finish, you know, 9th or 10th in this league, depending on how that Kansas game goes. But I don't think they feel like they need to try to do a whole bunch of stuff to pull a bunch of tricks to win games. They got through with their first one. If they win this game, maybe they'll start feeling different and kind of rolling through a little bit. But I don't think they feel that pressure to do that. And they really don't have the talent that they've had. They've been an NFL talent-laden program for a while. I mean, not like, you know, Miami or Florida State or Alabama or somebody, but they've had NFL players on their team for a while, and they just don't have that right now.
In some of the middle-of-the-pack teams in the Big 12, the Oklahoma State's, Baylor's, I think people usually are making a mistake when they underestimate what Oklahoma State's going to do, but I think we expect Kansas to be, even though they might be a little bit better, they're going to be down at the bottom. But, you know, what do you think of the second to third class with Kansas in its own class, kind of Texas Tech, Oklahoma State, those teams? Who do you think might surprise?
Oklahoma State's offense can be very good. I think they should have played Spencer Sanders some last year at quarterback. He was redshirting. He could have played 4 games, but it didn't play a snap. He was very good against Oregon State. I know a lot of people didn't probably watch it. It was late night last Friday. He was very good, but their defense is not good. Oregon State's not a good team offensively, and they gave up a lot of points. So that's going to be something that Oklahoma State needs to work with. They have no issues today with McNeese State. And they've got at Tulsa next week, which isn't a real problem because Tulsa's down. But I think Oklahoma State and Iowa State are going to be that probably the best part of that second class if we're already putting Iowa State out of the top three.
Right.
I think Tech is going to be a real question mark. I don't know what to think of TCU yet. You know, I really don't. I'd like to see them for another week or so. But Baylor is a team that's bringing back a quarterback and a coach. We always talk about how important that is. I think Baylor is going to be someone to watch. The TCU is off this week. They've got at Purdue next week. So, you know, I think in probably 2 weeks I'll have a little better handle on those guys. But as far as what I watched, I was super impressed with Oklahoma State's offense, which we generally are, right, in their game last week. And I just don't know what to think about Tech at this point. And, you know, I think we're not very happy with what we saw from Iowa State. So I think in that mix there, we'll kind of see if someone can jump up and take a piece out of either Oklahoma or Texas, who are the two teams in the top 10 right now. But I think there's plenty of room to move around that middle and find yourself in that big chunk at the top of it or near the bottom of it.
And finally, Baylor, Matt Rhule has been highly respected. And is this a year where opinion of him will sort of tip a little bit one way or the other?
Yeah, probably so. You know, they're non-con super easy. They don't have a BCS team in there because they had were grandfathered in. I think this is the last year they won't. So they got UTSA, and then they're at Rice. But then they chunk right out of the start. You know, we're going to see where they land because they're going to be playing those teams who they need to be better than. That's Iowa State and at K-State. So, yeah, this will be the year for him. I mean, NFL teams were calling him. We'll have to see if he can kind of bounce up and take that program to the next level. People respect him. And, you know, he was in that spot that maybe West Virginia was in a couple years ago. There were no real pressure on them to do things. Probably a little pressure to win now, though.
Todd, we always appreciate the time, and enjoy your college football Saturday, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
We'll do. Missouri, right up here next.
That's exactly right.
And K-State.
K-State, too. That'll probably have less intrigue, but we'll see. You never know. Todd Lebo talking some college football as we wrap up the season debut of College Football Game Day. We'll be right back at you next week and every week right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.